welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Dave Pruner, executive director of the Texas Entrepreneurship Exchange for Energy, known as TEXE, a nonprofit housed out of Greentown Labs that connects Texas college students on a mission to innovate within the energy transition. Dave joins the show today to share how TEXE has expanded beyond just an annual student startup competition, and he also weighs in on how Houston is doing as a leader within the energy transition. Dave, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Natalie, and it's great to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you and hear about what's going on at TEXE. You know, a lot of things are happening, and we have a lot to catch up on. But before we get into that, you've had a very storied career in energy, and a lot of it based here in Houston. So wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your career and how your path led you to TEXE, which is a bit different from what you've been doing. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I would be happy to. We came down to Houston here in the 90s. I was doing energy banking in New York City and worked for the Coastal Corporation, which is now part of Kinder Morgan. And that was our entree, gosh, 25 years ago. My wife and I came down and then subsequently worked for a series of energy companies. One of them was Zurich, which was Enron's water company, and luckily left Enron before the crash, but then went on to help build up an energy research firm called Wood Mackenzie. And we sold that 8 years ago. And then I did a last turn as a executive search consultant with Heidrick & Struggles, where I did kind of board and CEO work. And that was probably my biggest exposure to where I am today, in that about half the work I did was with traditional fossil companies, companies names that you would know, kind of Fortune 500, 100 type companies, but also about half was energy transition. So clean energy, low carbon energy activities and so forth. And that's really what kind of initially created the catalyst for me to become more interested in the energy transition. While that was going on, over the last 10 years, I've taught at the business school at Rice, and I teach a course called Energy Transition Investing, where we take a deep dive into that world and the various sectors and markets. And from that, I just had a period when I decided it was time to give back. And I'd had, luckily, a career, feel very blessed for what I had and what I was able to go ahead and do, and decided to go work for a nonprofit. And a guy named David Baldwin, who runs a company called SCF Partners, had started TEXE 2 years ago and said they'd done a version zero last year and it was so successful. They said, hey, you know what? We need to hire an executive director. We're going to go ahead and go full bore. So I signed on last fall and here I am.
That's so interesting. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about, I know you weren't there at the time, but like the origin story of TEXE. It's such a unique concept, and we'll obviously explain it a little bit more too, but what's that? What was the inception like from your understanding?
Kind of variety of factors that led to its creation. But the seminal event was a piece of work had been done for the Greater Houston Partnership by McKinsey on the future of Houston, and showed that if Houston isn't careful and doesn't make sure to go ahead and transition with this energy expansion we're seeing, that they're at risk of losing hundreds of thousands of jobs. If they catch the transition right and make the conversion to cleaner and low carbon fuels, they can actually gain about 1.4 million jobs. And I unfortunately don't know that. I can't remember if that's 2040 or 2050. But it was this eye opener for everyone of, hey, we need to make sure that if the energy transition is going to happen, it happens here and Houston stays the energy capital. So David Baldwin literally at the meeting said, listen, I've got the beginning of the funnel. That's the universities. That's where the innovation comes from. And I will go ahead and work with them to do that. And from that, TEXE was born. And they did a version zero in the first year. And the way they set it up is David went up to MIT and said, you're the leading entity in the country for startups and startup ecosystems. Boston is the model. We would love to recreate that in Houston. And then Greentown Labs, which outside largest climate tech incubator in the country and outside of Boston, the only place they'd opened was here about 3 years ago in Houston, and teamed up with them and partnered. And that's actually our two main partners that got us going, and then went out to the five leading universities. So Rice, Texas A&M, University of Texas, University of Houston, and then Prairie View A&M, and said these will be our founding schools, and all our programs are open to all schools. But the idea being is that's a group where we have about 65 fellows that we currently have enlisted in our effort. About a half a dozen of those actually are also at MIT. We have a bunch of Texans up there that now want to come back to Houston if the ecosystem's growing. But net net, it was those schools that kind of helped found the whole organization today.
So what does Texie look like these days? I know there's competition where you accept applications from these student innovators. So how does the process work? What does it look like?
So our mission is to create the next generation of energy transition and climate tech entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs too. They don't all have to start companies, but ideally we would like the best and brightest to be able to pull that off here. So what we've done is the program consists of the fellowship where they do apply. Those applications will be opening up here shortly this spring. They're from the five universities that we mentioned that the fellows would be in essays, interviews, that kind of stuff. And with that, they are a select group in that not only are they kind of the spokesperson for us on campus, but also we like to do lots of good, enriching things with them. So we're sending a group up to MIT almost every month for their energy conference, for their climate tech summit, for their energy hackathon, so that they can cross-pollinate and meet with other entrepreneurs in that sector in the East Coast region. And then what we also do is we have a course we hold every fall, which is called our Entrepreneurs Boot Camp. And we bring a guy named Bill Ouellette, who literally wrote the book called Discipline Entrepreneurship, which is the one used by most universities around the world for how to go ahead and start a company. And we teach people how to do that in the energy transition and climate tech sector, because that's all we work in, is that sector of entrepreneurship. And this year, we probably had about 150 people at that. And then this spring in next month, we will be having our business plan competition, which we go ahead and do at CERAWeek. And we'll give away about $50,000 to companies that are looking to go ahead and start. And this is pre-seed, non-dilutive, so it's not equity or anything. It's just a grant. And the idea behind it is it's participants who are currently enrolled in a university in Texas. So submissions have opened for that. They actually close this Friday and so forth. If you hear this podcast and have a great idea, you can still go ahead and email us, but officially it closes on Friday. And the idea is there is for the companies that are furthest along that are actually starting their companies and need funding to get to the next level, they would compete and participate in something like that we would do. And then the other things we do is we have internships where we'll pay interns. They work for free for startup companies here in Houston at Greentown and the Ion and places like that. So they're free to the startups. We go ahead and cover their costs and salary, and they get a chance to see what entrepreneurship's all about. And then we also, next year, will be starting an accelerator for the most advanced companies. And that's basically a 3-month summer course modeled on Delta V's accelerator that MIT started, for about a dozen companies that will come in. They've graduated and are now looking to launch their companies, get their first round of funding. And they would go through our summer accelerator where they learn how to raise funds and deal with things like anchor customers and total addressable market and things like that to get their business plan sound to be ready to then go to market by the end of the summer to raise funds. So all those activities and others create our kind of process and curriculum. But everything we do is free to all that participate, and also open, most of it open to any college student anywhere. But it's geared toward the Texas universities, because what happened was in the study, it was also shown that the amount of startups that exist to date over the last 10 years, Northern California has everybody beat with, let's say, roughly 2,000 energy, climate, tech, transition startups. Boston then is second with roughly about 1,600, and then Texas trails with really about only 700. But every one of those startups ends up coming down here to Houston once they need to scale, find a pilot plant, get a JV partner, get bought, or get absorbed into these bigger companies. So the whole idea for us is let's have them go ahead and start the company and keep them here.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because when you think about the challenge with innovation and specifically the energy transition processes, we need the future workforce and we also need the new technologies. And it seems like Tech-C is like the intersection of that. You know, the future, the college students that'll become the future workforce and their ideas that could be future startups and technologies. It's also interesting because, yeah, you mentioned Stanford and MIT, those are really great ecosystems for spinning out companies where Texas has not led in that way. And we have so many great universities. So it seems like what Tech-C is doing is kind of combining the forces of all of the universities here and the five founding universities you're working with. What's it like managing that collaborative effort? Because I'm sure it's not easy, but it's a huge opportunity.
No, you've hit it on the head, and that is, in the end, we have five different family members that all need to be managed differently, and managed is an overstatement, but coordinated differently. The idea behind Tech-C was that there's plenty of bright students in all those schools, one, and there's plenty of innovation going on. It's whether it can grow, prosper, and be sustainable. So our main job is, pretty much all the universities have some level of entrepreneurship. Some have it at like Rice, which is the leading number one business school for entrepreneurship in the country. U of H, the leading number one undergraduate school for entrepreneurship. But when you get into different colleges, even at some of the most advanced entrepreneurship schools, one college will have great entrepreneurship and they'll have no courses at another college, a scholarship like a engineering school or a law school or something like that. So our job was, because it's not evenly spread, is one, without a doubt, we look to connect all of them. So that engineer at Texas A&M that has an idea that they want to pursue, but they don't know the business side, can meet that Rice MBA. And then when they realize this is going to be a highly regulated product, we need a regulatory lawyer out of UT, we can make all that happen and connect them. And part of what I left out is we're building a digital community so they can also connect on a digital sense. At the same time, what we also found is no one school has the answer. So when you put all the schools together, we actually do have most of the answer. Almost everything we need is within those five schools to do. And it isn't just about the five schools that just creates a curriculum. It really is open to everybody. But we found that there is much more force and power, but you have to connect those skill sets. And that's really a large part of what we do is convene, bring them together to allow them, because what basically, history has shown statistically, the more diverse a team is in skill set and background, the more likely a company as a startup is to survive, because it is a team sport. So even though you hear about Steve Jobs and Jeff Bezos and individuals that are entrepreneurs, in reality, it's teams that form this. So we find that it is much stronger if we can bring these schools together. And then that way, if a law school doesn't have much entrepreneurship, but another one does, those two individuals can meet, because we've been able to say that the whole is worth more, the sum of all those is worth more than the individual.
It's so unique to be able to provide university students resources outside of their own campuses. And I think what, you know, is also unique about Tech-C is that it's housed out of Greentown Labs, which obviously has strong connections in both Boston and Houston. So what's the relationship look like for Greentown? And it's like this, there's a collaboration is the word for Tech-C, right? So tell us all.
So we want to be friends with everybody, Natalie. But in all seriousness, Greentown was just an obvious one. They've been a huge part of the step forward of the startup ecosystem here for climate tech and energy transition. And so the reason we literally house ourselves here with them is our hope is for those that choose to be entrepreneurs and create startups, they could then find a home here at Greentown to go ahead and grow that idea and take it to the next level. At the same time, realize we're fine if some of the people that get inspired by our boot camp, for example, which is a 3-day kind of intense session on entrepreneurism, and by the end, you're pitching a company to a group of judges. But the idea is, if that individual then would go ahead and, let's say, get an offer from a super major to work in their upstream because they're a petroleum engineer, but they have this entrepreneurial bent, especially around transition or climate tech, it's still a win for all of us if that individual would basically go back to the super major and go, you know what, I'd love to work in your upstream, but how about, can I work in your ventures group or your clean energy group? or your carbon capture group. So we're trying to expose people and move new talent, as you were saying, into that area. And that's what we call entrepreneurship. And the commonality of both is they're both innovators. They're just going to innovate different ways. But for the ones that are hardcore innovators, our sense is Greentown is a great place for them to be. Ion is also a great place also for them to be surrounded by like-minded others that they can lean on to kind of help grow, stabilize, and then scale those companies over time.
I think something, when you were talking about how the program has really expanded, I mean, so much of what you said from like the internships and the upcoming accelerator, so much that I didn't even know about. So it's exciting to hear. And I feel like, you know, there's a lot that you're doing. So tell me a little bit about your role as executive director and what's on your mind, your daily plate, but also big picture leading this still relatively new organization.
So initially, because we're the big connector in the business, is trying to understand who is out there in the ecosystem. And I think it even surprised Greentown because they currently have 70 companies at Greentown. And it took Boston almost 2 to 3 times the amount of time that it took Greentown in just 2 years to get to that level here. And I think it surprised them and everybody that the fact there was a lot of unmet needs and a large innovation system that typical Houston, highly distributed all over the city and not really coalescing in any one area. And so forth. So what's happened is for us, it's finding those venues, events, and activities that can get like-minded innovators and entrepreneurs together. So the programming around that has been key. You've heard of some of it. The other part is just the financial stability. We're a nonprofit. So we're spending a lot of time seeing what companies and entities have a vested interest in making sure that Houston makes the transition and pivots to the low carbon, zero carbon fuels. And in doing that, what we found is our backers are largely corporate and names of people you all would know, like Chevron and kind of across the value chain, Calpine, Williams, Hillcorp, companies like that. But also we have some foundations like Jeff Hildebrand, John Arnold, and people like that that really want to see Texas and Houston specifically remain the energy capital, regardless of what type of energy it is. So I've been spending quite a bit of time with entities that are supportive of this effort to create a long lasting kind of multi-year endowment for the entity. And then the other part is literally helping connect the dots. And that is because we are in this position of we want everybody to go ahead and participate, which includes venture capitalists, which includes government institutions, which includes other startups that have started up that now want to go ahead and give back. We're in the process of meeting them and creating the programs that bring those folks together that allows them to work with each other, be it that it's a founder coming back and talking to a tech C group on where they were and they were sitting in their seat 6 years ago here where I got to where I was, to a venture capital group explaining here's how the money side of the business works and here's what would be required for you to go ahead and get money from someone like us or what capital at what time would you go ahead and get, et cetera. So we spend a lot of time trying to go ahead and connect those groups, educate those that desire to learn about it. But at the same time, we're spending time finishing up the financing to make sure that Texi is built for the long haul.
That's a lot on your plate. The connecting the dots, the financial stability of a nonprofit, it is a lot. One thing that you do also have coming up is I know you mentioned CERAWeek and applications wrapped up for those technologies, but for those who are interested in attending, I've attended the Texi event at CERAWeek, but what should people know if they're at CERAWeek about the pitch part of it?
Yes. So what we're doing is it's a combination of AHEADI, the Houston Energy Transition Initiative, us and Rice Alliance. The three of us are holding the event together. There are categories for more mature companies that are not university-based. And for the requirement for us is one of the founders needs to be enrolled in a Texas university to be eligible for our prize. And in our section of the competition, we will be awarding money. The other three won't, but they're also doing things like those selected will have a chance to spend a day at what they call office hours, meeting venture capitalists that have flown in from all over the country that are interested in their technology, to meet and start to make those connections with those individuals. But what we're going to do is distill the group down to five finalists, which we'll present in front of a large auditorium of investors and industry people on their idea. And then, a little bit like the award shows you see on TV, we will pick the top three. First thing, so first place is 15,000, second place is 10,000, and third, 25, 15, and 10. 25 for first, 15 second, 10 for third, will then be awarded the seed capital to go ahead and do this. On the same day, they'll also have three other tracks of more mature companies, and that's the part that Rice Alliance is running too. So they will have a chance to also meet and network with those entities. And in ours, they actually will be assigned a mentor if they make it to the final presentation day. They'll be awarded that weeks in advance, and a mentor will work with them on everything from pitch to design to all parts of the company to go ahead and help them make them as successful as possible in the pitch competition. And this is all done in conjunction with Agora Week, which is the low carbon side of CERAWeek, and almost has gotten as big or bigger than CERAWeek proper.
I feel like I don't really, I mean, it makes sense, but I don't really go to anything other than Agora every time I go to CERAWeek. There's more and more every year. So I wonder if you can, I mean, at the end of the day, their climate tech is so broad. What are some of the technologies that you're specifically looking for that have gone through TechSeed that are just really cool and you want to talk about?
Well, I always have to be a little bit careful because we love all our children equally, as you know, as being a good parent. But let me talk about the two main areas we're seeing, and that is because of Houston and its fossil background, a lot of the Houston incumbents now, the major companies, have kind of picked what you would call the molecule side of the clean energy world to focus on. So that's fuels. Think hydrogen, think renewable natural gas, think of sustainable aviation fuel and things like that and so forth. But there's another huge side of it, which is, and there's multiple sides, but the electrification side, so the electron side, be it renewable power, be it electric vehicles, be it charging stations, et cetera, and so forth. In Houston, the majority of what we've seen, and not totality by any stretch, but I'd say more than most, we've seen a lot of companies on the molecule side, and the two hottest areas are carbon capture and hydrogen. Carbon capture further down the road, as you may know, carbon capture already exists today. There's not a ton of projects around the world, but it does exist and has been going on. People are trying to find a way to do that more economically. So we've run into companies that are looking to do that either on the sequestration side, the capture side, and the transportation side. We've seen companies kind of participate in all. The other one that's not as mature far along is the hydrogen market. And to get around, hydrogen is used regularly every day, all day at refineries and so forth. But to try to make it a true transportation fuel and industrial fuel to replace currently what's being used and so forth, it's in its earlier development there, but there are all kinds of technologies on how to do that cheaper, how to store it cheaper and transport it. So we found that the two hottest areas we've seen tend to be kind of that hydrogen carbon capture, and we could easily just fill our organization with companies that are looking, working on parts of that equation. But again, things always work best when you have a diverse community. So we try to make sure as much as possible, we've got people working on all the issues as it relates to going ahead and solving what we call the dual challenge, which is the world needs more energy, but with less emissions. And to do that, you need all the above. So you need the electron side, you need the molecule side, and then you need the services around that to make it happen.
Absolutely. Well, I think that kind of segues pretty nicely into some big picture topics I wanted with you, because you do have this really interesting perspective of you've worked in the industry for a long time and now specializing in the transition and nonprofit side and future of work and future technologies. So how do you see Houston in this whole energy transition equation? I know obviously a lot of people at the front of it want to see Houston as a leader of the Houston of the energy transition. What's your pulse on that as being a reality?
So one of the issues we had, I spent the last decade building boards and hiring CEOs for all kinds of energy companies. And there was a period, I would say pre-pandemic and a little bit into the pandemic, where not everybody was on board with the issue of climate change and the issue of carbon. And the nice thing is now is that is fully in the rearview mirror. There's not a company of any size and a management team of any major entity that doesn't fully believe they need to do something there. And not just do something which could be preventative and cleaning up their own footprint, but actually opportunistically, there's a business to be had there, an opportunity. So the way I would state it is the train has fully left the station and picked up speed now on this whole issue of transition and climate. So that's been nice to see and create a lot of tailwinds. When you put on top of that what the Biden administration has done with the infrastructure bill and also gone ahead and done with the Inflation Reduction Act, IRA bill, promoting low carbon and renewable fuels, in the end, it has turbocharged the market quite a bit, and such that even if the administration changes, it will slow this pace in the train, but it will not, the speed will not go lower than it is now. It will just move slower, more quickly, just through the way they wrote the bills. That won't go ahead and impact it. The reason I bring it up is the transition will start to pick up speed. On the startup side, we really feel like we're at an inflection point, is here in Houston specifically, and that is this startup world existed but really wasn't connected or supported, and that's starting to happen. And you can already see kind of the exponential acceleration that's happening, but we need to feed and continue that and provide the support. And there's a variety of things we would need to do to make sure that happens. But if that continues, there is no reason that Houston shouldn't continue to stay as the energy capital of the world, however you want to define energy, and not just as the fossil fuel capital of the world, to go ahead and do that. So there are a ton of tailwinds on this topic right now. And most recently, the innovation venture side is probably getting the greatest attention as the incumbents have already started to endorse, spend money, hire staff, dedicate assets, and so forth to do that. The next area to really fill in is the beginning of that funnel. And that is the entrepreneur thought ideas. And there's a lot of people interested in that. Still pretty fragmented, but it is very much happening and starting to coalesce. But that's the part that'll need some care and feeding to make sure indeed it happens, because there's still factors that could set us back there.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing to think about. And it's so true. You know, it used to be like, don't talk about ESG or climate change, or we don't call it climate tech, we call it energy transition.
There you go. Yep.
The verbiage is always fluctuating. And I feel like there was also this period, and I wonder if you think we're still in it, but this period that, like, you know, some of the incumbents like recognize the need, but they're racing to be second. Like, they, no one wants to take the first steps in making big commitments to either CCUS or hydrogen or just anything. Do you feel like that's still happening? Like, companies are still playing it safe, waiting for that big first mover?
Yeah. So on that, what I would say is, and this is going back to my Heidrick days, having worked with a lot of CEOs, literally one of the biggest issues they said they deal with is not allocating money to energy transition. It's how much do I allocate? And for these companies, it's billions. So how many billions do I want to put in that? Because by definition, due to the state of the market, the returns are not there yet. So they would be diluting their returns by doing it. But they also know that that's the future. So I don't get anyone who naysays and says, we can ignore this. This will go away. I take it back. There is one company, not a leading company, but a decent old line company who kind of felt if Trump gets reelected, doesn't a lot of this go away? And I had to explain to him that it doesn't. And I came from your world, so I could see how you would see that. But when you see what's going on with the rest of the world and where, what's going on in the rest of the country outside of the Houston bubble, you'll realize it's not going away. That train is long gone and actually accelerating. So we had a great conversation. They listened. Don't know if we were able to convince them, but everybody else is in the mode of know that this is something that we need to do either A, defensively and clean up our act, be it methane emissions, be it our carbon footprint, be it, you know, reusable plastics, pick your topic kind of thing. But most of them have switched to opportunistic. And that is, this isn't just for inside, this is for outside. And that is, we can look outside the company, provide services, provide fuels, provide transportation, storage, and this is an opportunity for us. And more of them look at it that way. But what they don't know is how much to dedicate to it. And even what we dealt with, the quality of the people, what kind of people do I need to do that? And do they exist? So many are sorting through that, but it's not a question of if they do it, it's when, how much, and with who. And that's part of the tailwinds I was referring to. And I don't think that goes away regardless of who's in the White House and even in control of Congress. I don't think that changes. The pace may change, but I don't think the direction does.
It's nice to like remind everybody that that difference of if versus how much and when is the fact that we're fully in the how much and when. That's a win. You know what I mean? That's progress, right?
Well, and the big change I want to throw into is there was a period where literally in the depths of the pandemic where the energy companies, I mean, literally were given knockout punches because consumption dropped to zero, where we felt in the search business, we were doing more really CEO therapy because literally we would have calls with them of like, are we on the wrong side of this? Are we really harming and killing people? Are we not raising people from poverty, giving them light, electricity, and things like that? Are we really instead the ones that are hurting? Because that's how they felt. Because the whole low carbon, zero carbon renewable world was having such a heyday, and they were very much on the defensive. But the thing I can tell you is both sides realize now they need each other, because the renewable side is not ready to take over the grid yet. Basically, it just can't for all kinds of reasons. And they know they need the fossil side. And that's why nuclear has become a hot topic again and a nice middle ground for all that. But they now realize there's a codependency. But there was a time when if you were a fossil fuel executive, you would feel like the slacker in the group because the renewables had the angels and all the good press on their side. But the neat thing is I've seen both sides are much more reasonable, realizing there's a natural methodical transition, may not always be smooth either, that needs to happen. And we need each other and we need all of it. And it looks like we're going to need it a lot longer than we thought. We just need to provide more energy with less emissions.
Yeah, I think that it is also a great point to point out the public appearance of the energy industry and that evolution, which I think could honestly be a whole other podcast.
Yeah,
we probably shouldn't.
That it would. Yeah, we probably might want to do that over a beer or a wine instead. But anyhow,
yeah, the PR of the energy transition would make a great book or movie too. So, well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise on these topics, but also telling us all about TechSEE. It's such a great organization, and if people listening are going to CERWeek, definitely make that one a priority to check out the pitches. It is much more than TechSEE. So it's a really great opportunity to see some cool companies. And yeah, thank you so much for your time today.
Natalie, it was great spending time with you. Very much enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.